How is it going, everyone? It is once again me, Chewy, and I am the host of this horror podcast titled Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. And before we move on to the topic of today's episode, I want to remind you guys to go out and check us out on social media. We have a Linktree page, which is linktree.com/mythsbehindLGDS, and on there you can find all of our social media profiles. Everything from our Facebook to our Twitter to our Instagram, etc. And you also find a link to our online store. So if you want to score some sweet EMBL swag, then by all means, go ahead and do it. And for this episode, the topic is the 1999 version of the movie titled The House on Haunted Hill. So stick around. Okay, so moving on to the topic here, the movie. The movie came out in the year of 1999, actually on the 29th of October, so right around Halloween. It was directed by William Malone, who is also responsible for, among other things, an episode of the series Freddy's Nightmares, an episode from Tales from the Crypt, and also a movie that I don't like at all. which was Fear.com. I actually went to see that movie to the theater with some cousins of mine, and they were not very pleased because I picked the movie that time. So yeah, that was a very shitty movie, to say the least. And so the movie had a budget of around $19 million, and it collected around 43 in the box office, so it was somewhat profitable but not a smash hit. And as far as our cast members go, we have some pretty solid talent here. We have Jeffrey Rush as Stephen Price. We have the incredibly beautiful and talented Famke Janssen as Evelyn Stockard Price, Taye Diggs as Eddie Baker, Peter Gallagher as Donald Blackburn, MD, Chris Kattan of SNL fame, playing the role of Watson Pritchett, Ali Larder playing the role of Sarah Wolf, Bridget Wilson playing Melissa Margaret Marr. Max Perlich is Carl Schechter. He's the assistant that has a very grisly end, and I'll get into that later. And Jeffrey Combs playing Dr. Richard Benjamin Vanicut. I do want to mention really quick that the soundtrack is pretty well done. I think it holds up pretty good. It sets up the scenes properly. It is equally as creepy and scary as the visuals. And the score was composed by Don Davis. The song Sweet Dreams, which is a cover by Marilyn Manson, plays during the movie, but it's not on the soundtrack for some reason. I mean, I guess rights and copyright stuff like that. But that song is prominent in a few scenes. I believe it's played in the end credits too, so I have no idea, other than copyright, what could have prevented from having that song in the soundtrack. But anyways, our plot. Where to start with this movie? You know, first impressions, I do think the movie is better than I remembered. I'm not saying it's a masterpiece, I'm not saying it's a great piece of hidden horror cinema, but I did have some fun watching it. Actually, I just finished watching it about an hour ago, and I am recording this on Halloween evening, by the way. And yeah, I saw this movie when I was maybe in college. I mean, it came out in 99. I was in high school, but I don't think I saw it until I was in college, so about 3-4 years later. And it's a good movie. I mean, good, quote unquote. It has that unmistakable late 90s aesthetic. Anything from the visuals, like the way the shots are framed, the lighting, it's just, it screams late 90s, let's just put it that way. If you were around at that time, like me for example, this movie, not so much the topic itself, but again, the aesthetic of it reminds me of movies like The Faculty and The Haunting, which was released, I believe, the same year as this movie was. And as far as the movie goes, it starts off with a flashback sequence. It's shot in black and white slash sepia tones. And we find ourselves witnessing the mistreatment of the patients at the Vanicut Psychiatric Institute for the Criminally Insane. That is a name that just rolls off the tongue very easily. And the year is 1931. So Dr. Richard Vanicut is the head of this insane asylum. And his methods are not ethical, to say the least. So we see what appears to be an escaped patient. I believe it's, I don't know who it is. It's a man that's writing records or names or something like that. Maybe like a record keeper. And then after that, we see more patients escaped. And they surround him and dispatch him in a very gruesome way. I think they shove pencils on his throat. Not down his throat, mind you, but through his throat, like through his neck. So that's a pretty grisly visual there. And then eventually they get to the operating room in which Dr. Vanicut and his nurses are not only performing what appears to be a live vivisection of someone, as in the patient looks to be completely conscious and I'm assuming without any sort of anesthetic. So this person is suffering, of course, and not only are they doing this, but they're recording the procedure for posterity. And well, we see the patients get to them and they take them over, they are able to overcome them, and for some reason, Vanicut has this safety mechanism. The patients start a fire, and Vanicut seals them all in, and basically everyone in the building dies in the fire except for five people. And then we flash forward to the late 90s in 1999, in which we meet the very unhappily married couple of Evelyn Stockard Price and Stephen Price. Stephen Price is some sort of a amusement park tycoon type of person. I mean, he owns several amusement parks. His wife doesn't appear to like him very much. And the same of him towards her. I don't think they like each other a lot. So her birthday is coming up and she decides that she wants to rent this abandoned sanitarium after she sees an episode on a TV show where they talked about it and its history. So she's like, yeah, you know what? I definitely want to celebrate my birthday in a place where people were tortured. And so, I mean, I don't know what kind of thought process that is, but I digress. So she convinces the guy, Price, to rent this place for her. And she gives him a guest list, I guess her close friends and family. He proceeds to shred the list and create his own list, but magically, mysteriously, chan chan chan, the computer deletes his list and starts typing names of its own accord. And these invitations are then sent out, and the people that the computer ghost, whatever it is, decided to invite are the following: Jennifer Jensen, who is a film producer, Eddie Baker, who is a baseball player, or actually a former baseball player, a former celebrity, Melissa Marr, Donald Blackburn, who is a doctor, and the homeowner, who is Watson Pritchett. Now, it's important to mention that in the years since the tragic fire, Pritchett's family, actually bought the house and made it into their residence. So I'm like, who the fuck buys an abandoned insane sanitarium and converts it into a mansion for you to live and bring your family in? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what these people think. So anyways, the five guests arrive to the house where they are met by Evelyn and by Stephen Price. They mutually accuse each other of inviting random people because Evelyn had given Stephen the list, as I mentioned earlier. And then Stephen had created his own list, and they're both accusing each other of sabotaging the guest list. And they have no idea who the hell these people are that just came to the house. So they both agree to just, whatever, let's go along with this and see what the night takes us. So, as they're talking, this mysterious stained glass window that's in the ceiling just shatters, and it almost ends up killing Evelyn. So then the premise of the movie is revealed. Stephen Price says that whoever makes it to the end of the night, or to the morning rather, alive will each win $1 million. But the condition is they have to be in the house all night, and if they leave at any point, they forfeit their possible earnings. So, as they're arguing with each other, because Pritchett, the house owner, played by Chris Kattan, who I think just played himself, I don't think he was acting, I think he was just him, like in his everyday life, he is trying to argue with Price because he doesn't want to hear it. He wants out of the house. He doesn't want to even compete for the money. All he wants is the money from the rental of the facilities. And as soon as he got his check, the house locking mechanism triggers and everyone is locked inside. So, chan chan chan, there is no escape from anyone now. And people make the smart decision, and I say that with heavy quotation marks, of splitting up. So, Jennifer, Eddie, and Pritchett decide to go to the basement because they believe they can find some sort of a release mechanism for the doors. And as they're walking around, Jennifer reveals that her name is not Jennifer, but Sarah Wolf. And she is, in fact, the assistant to the real Jennifer. So we have an imposter in our midst. And basically, she admits that she wants the money because she found out that if she was able to hang out in this house for the whole night, she could win $1 million. So then both Eddie and Pritchett disappear, and Sarah appears to find Eddie, but it's a very weird version of Eddie. She calls out to him, but he does not respond. He just stares at her, and he's got some sort of a weird glare in his eyes. So she follows him into this room where there is a tank that's full of blood, and she sees what appears to be Eddie jump into this tank. So she runs towards him, tries to pull him out, but as she's doing this, whatever is in that tank is trying to pull her in and drown her. But at the 11th hour, the real Eddie appears and saves her. At around the same time, Melissa is exploring the house, and she is some sort of a actress on hiatus or something like that. I think she mentions she has a TV show, or had rather. And she walks around with this huge camcorder, as one would in the 90s. She's kind of what would eventually become like a urban exploration type of person, or an influencer, I don't know what to call them. So essentially, she's trying to get some good footage so that she can pitch this idea to a TV network or something and get another show. But she finds this room and she ends up disappearing. Eventually, they find her camera and they find out that she was assaulted by some sort of mysterious force, but it's not visible to us, so we're just left to imagine what ended up happening to her. I gotta mention also that Price does have some sort of ploy to all of this. He brought in his assistant named Schechter, and this guy is hiding in some sort of a control room with surveillance cameras, and he can make stuff happen. And it is around this point in the movie that he goes to visit him and ask him, "Hey, what the hell? Like, how come you locked us in?" But when he finds him, he finds that this guy's face is completely gone. As, I mean, not just his face, but his head is completely hollowed out like a fucking jack-o'-lantern. So basically, half of his head is missing, like the first half that features his face. Right? So, of course, this freaks Price to no to no avail. And in the surveillance cameras, he sees what appears to be the ghost of Dr. Vannicut walking around. Now, at this point, he doesn't think it's a ghost. He just sees a guy walking around with a freaking hacksaw. But yeah, he knows that something's not good, but he still thinks it's somehow his wife's fault. So they go back and they have an argument in the main hall. And Evelyn basically threatens anyone that comes near her that she will shoot the hell out of them. So she goes back to her chambers, apparently to sleep. But after a while, we hear a commotion and they find Evelyn strapped to this gurney, basically, which is where they would put a patient to administer electroshock therapy. And we see her basically cook on screen. I mean, it sounds a little bit gruesome, but they're trying desperately to find a switch to turn off the shock machine. And eventually they do find one, but it's too late. Apparently, she has already expired. So Price freaks out. I mean, as much as he hates his wife, I think he's he wanted to be the one to kill her himself. But they're able to overpower him after he threatens them with a gun, and they lock him in this weird metal chamber that has moving images. I don't know, it's kind of weird. Basically a projector. And there's goggles in there that if you feel like you're overwhelmed by the visuals, you can wear them, and allegedly that would make them a little bit more tolerable. So they decide to put Price in there, and everyone except for the doctor, Blackburn, leaves, and basically he volunteers to stay behind and keep an eye on him, quote unquote. So as soon as the other ones are gone, he turns on the machine, and this basically freaks out Price again. So it's not a very nice visual. It's some dude bouncing a basketball or something like that, but he's dressed like a waiter. He's wearing this black coat and black pants and white shirt and a bow tie, and it looks like Dr. Vanacut, but I don't know if it's him or not, to be honest. And speaking of Dr. Vanacut, Sarah and Eddie are exploring the house and they find his office. So they find out that the people that are invited to this little soiree are actually descendants from the five survivors of the fire in 1931. So Pritchett, the house owner, who has been doing nothing but being a prophet of doom in this whole movie, he's basically been screaming to anyone that will listen to him that the house is alive and that they're all gonna die. So he basically says that it must have been the spirits in the house that invited them. So when the computer deleted the names of the people that Stephen Price had invited in place of the list that his wife had given him, basically, we are led to believe that the house possessed the computer through the internet and invited these five people there. Then we cut to a scene in which Blackburn goes and appears to be practicing, how do I say this politely, necrophilia to Evelyn's body. But, chan chan chan, it turns out that she's not really dead. She basically faked her death, and Blackburn injects something into her, and she's able to regain her consciousness. And they reveal their plan. Basically, what they're thinking of doing is they want to frame Price, the husband, for the murders, and they're hoping that somebody will kill him, and they can pin their death on that person. So then we are revealed that Evelyn is a lot more evil than we thought at first, because she stabs Blackburn with a scalpel. And this death had one of the most unique shots, I think. I mean, I think it's kind of disturbing. Not especially scary, but it's just kind of the implications of it, because after she stabs him, we cut to his point of view. And we see how his vision is fading to black. And the last thing that we see is her face. And she has an expression in her face that's very, not excited, but it's kind of hard to describe what she looks like. But she looks not happy. I mean, I don't know what the word is, to be honest, but her expression is on point. I mean, she seems to be on the way to enjoying having done this, if that makes sense. So off camera, she basically hacks off this guy's head, Blackburn. So she goes to the chamber in which Price was locked in. She lets him out, and she leaves the head and the body of Blackburn in the chamber for the others to find. So when they get there, they open the door, and they find the severed head and the decapitated body. And basically, they assume that Price is the one that did it. So as they're walking around, Price appears in front of Sarah, covered in blood. And she freaks out. She's asking, or he's asking rather, her to help him. He's like, I have no idea what happened. I don't know what's going on. But she freaks out and she shoots him. She empties a clip on this guy. And then Eddie and Pritchett get there and they calm her down and they take her back to the main chamber of the house, the main hall. And then we see Evelyn walking towards the what appears to be the corpse of Price. But, chan chan chan, another plot twist. It turns out that Price was wearing a bulletproof vest and he was only pretending to be dead because he already knew the plan that Evelyn and Blackburn were secretly lovers and trying to get rid of him and get his money. So, this movie is full of plot twists. I mean, not very good ones, mind you, but still. So, they're fighting, they're kind of bumping each other into walls, this and that, and Price throws her into this wall that breaks, and she ends up falling in this room. It kind of looks like a cave, actually. So in this cave, she's taken prisoner by an entity that's called the Darkness in the credits here. It's basically a cloud of evil that contains the essence of all the suffering of the patients that perished in that fire. So this cloud of evil energy starts chasing Price around the house. He tries to get to the main hall, but the door is locked. So then Pritchett opens the door and he is absorbed by the darkness. So the only ones left at this point are Price, Sarah, and Eddie. And Price concludes that there must be a way out in the attic of the building. So they run towards there and he's able to actually open the door, or actually a window, by accident. He's just throwing stuff around, trying to get stuff to work. After that, Sarah and Eddie get to the attic, but the darkness kind of finds a way through the cracks of the house. I don't know if it's the vents or like the cracks in the floor. So it appears right in front of them. And Price sees that the darkness is going to engulf Sarah, so he pushes her out of the way, which means that he basically lets himself be engulfed by it. Sarah is able to get out, but the darkness is able to close the gate. So Eddie's trapped inside the house with it. And it is here that we get the final plot twist. Apparently Eddie is not a real descendant of the family because he screams that he's adopted. And this is, to me, probably the most, I don't know what to call it, but cop-out ending? I mean, I don't know, because the ghost of Pritchett is able to get out of the darkness for a minute, and it pulls on the levees that opens the gate, so Eddie's able to get out, and as soon as he is out of the building, then the darkness assimilates Pritchett again, and that's it, pretty much. The darkness is trapped in the building, which leaves Sarah and Eddie outside in this tall-ass building overlooking a cliff with the sun rising in front of them, and they actually find the 5 checks, all for $1 million each, made out to cash. And Sarah asks the most important question in this movie: how the hell are they going to get down from there? So, I mean, apparently there's going to be a cleaning crew that comes in at some point in that day, so they'll be fine. But, I mean, so that was The House on Haunted Hill. Not a very good movie, not terrible either, but yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what to say, man. I mean, it's, like I said, I had some fun watching it. It's a lot better than I remembered, and that's not saying much, really. I mean, it's not a great movie, but I seem to remember it not being this entertaining. I mean, it's funny at times, it's a little campy. I mean, the acting is a little hammy. They ham it up quite a bit, especially Jeffrey Rush. But I think overall it's okay. I mean, it's not terrible. I don't know. Okay, so now moving on to some trivia factoids from this movie, courtesy of IMDb.com. So there's a scene in the beginning that has a roller coaster, and that's where we meet the character of Price. And it's actually a real coaster, of course, but it is actually the one from the Incredible Hulk at Universal Islands in Orlando, Florida. I wonder if that's still up, by the way. I mean, this movie's 23 years old, so I wonder if that roller coaster is still around or not. It'd be fun to ride it. I mean, not really. I hate roller coasters. I like to have my feet on the ground at all times. Thank you very much. And another thing that I found here is that the role of Dr. Vanicott, played by Jeffrey Combs, was actually considered to be given to none other than Mr. Marilyn Manson, who at that time period was probably one of the, if not the most infamous rock artist at that point. So I don't know how he would have done here. I mean, I don't think he would have had many lines, or who knows? I mean, who knows? What I suspected, Chris Kattan improvised some of his more comical moments in the film. So he was playing himself. I was right. He was basically just living life as Chris Kattan in a movie. And the name of Jeffrey Rush is Price. And of course, the original, the main character, was played by Vincent Price. So that was a nice little homage to him. This I missed out on. It says here that when Stephen Price is talking to Schechter, his assistant, in the beginning of the film, there is a Freddy Krueger glove in the background. I gotta go back and watch it again. I completely missed that. The role of Evelyn Stockard Price, which was played by Famke Janssen, was actually almost given to Elizabeth Hurley, who at this time was basically riding the waves of the Austin Powers movie, the late 90s. And continuing to speak about how other people could have played roles in this movie, the role of Melissa Marr, which was played by Bridget Wilson, was almost given to Cindy Crawford. I wonder how that would have played out. I don't think she was a great actress, to be honest. I mean, she was more famous in the early 90s for being a model more than an actress. But I don't know. I don't know how that would have turned out. I like Bridget Wilson. I think she was a good actress. In this movie, I think she wasn't used too much. I think she only has maybe like 3 or 4 scenes before she is dispatched. The company that created this movie, called Dark Castle Entertainment, actually had a gimmick for the people who went to see the movie in the theaters. What they did is, with the purchase of every ticket for this movie, they were given a scratch-off ticket. And each of those tickets would have a chance of winning money. Probably not a whole lot of money, because it says that the cash prices for all the tickets totaled $1 million. So I'm assuming just basically the cost of the ticket, I mean, 15, 20 bucks, maybe 100 bucks, if anything. I mean, it doesn't say that here specifically, but I'm just guessing that about that. Now, this is a little bit interesting. So when creating the darkness, that cloud of evil that attacks people at the end of the movie, it says here that the animators used images of naked women. So they basically recorded naked women dancing, and then they applied a mirror to that image and like superimposed it next to it. And then they rotated the image many, many times, and it creates what appears to be this massive limbs, arms and legs. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of interesting. I thought it looked creepy as hell, but I had no idea it was created by dancing women. And it was actually inspired by the visuals in Lovecraft's novels, H.P. Lovecraft, and also by the Rorschach-Ingblot tests. those infamous abstract ink blots that they show you, and they're supposed to reflect some sort of your subconscious thoughts. Another character that was going to be different, at some point in the movie, actually in the beginning, when Evelyn is watching TV and she finds the house for her birthday party, there is a host named Peter Graves, but the person that was considered for that role was actually Christopher Lee. I think that would have been a nice cameo for him. I mean, Christopher Lee is a legend in the horror genre. So to conclude this segment, I want to mention real quick that this movie was not very much loved by critics. If you care about this kind of thing, it has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 31%. And most reviews are generally unfavorable. So among the most scathing ones, I'm going to read this one real quick. The New York Times called the film a sorry reincarnation of the original. And they went on to say, and I quote, "This film wastes the talents of actors like Jeffrey Rush and Peter Gallagher in hollow roles and relies heavily on its sets and special effects to do the work that should have been accomplished by its director and writer." So, ouch. Like I mentioned earlier in this episode, I don't think the movie is great. But I also don't think it's terrible. I mean, I think it's a nice way to spend a rainy afternoon with some popcorn, some pizza, some beer or soda, whatever you like to drink. And you have a couple of laughs here and there. I mean, but overall, I'm actually going to give my scores in the next segment with Mariah. But I can say that I recommend this movie if you like 90s cinema. Specifically late 90s horror cinema, mind you, because I mean, just watching it kind of made me nostalgic for those times. But it does have some redeeming qualities. I mean, I think the visuals are interesting. The makeup is pretty cool. Actually, I believe the makeup was done by Greg Nicotero of many, many other horror movies, and specifically a little show called The Walking Dead. So you know that the makeup effects are on point if you got the guy from The Walking Dead on your staff. So, well, that's going to be all for this segment right here. And I'll be right back with Mariah's segment after this break. Stick around. Okay, and we are back now. And we have Mariah's segment for The House on Haunted Hill, the 1999 version. So, Mariah, first impressions, what do you think of the movie? Just a couple of things that you may have liked or not liked about it.
It was very cheesy and great at the same time. So, super 90s.
So, how different is the 90s cheesy versus the 80s cheesy? Because it's different.
The one I saw originally was from, I believe, the 50s.
Yeah, well, yeah, I meant in the sense of, like, when you watch a cheesy 80s movie, that kind of cheesy is different from this.
Yeah, the same era. Yes, it is. It's more of annoying teenagers, I'd say, versus the 80s cheesy horror films. Even they weren't as annoying in the 80s. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It has a lot of what I like to call the MTV vibes, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely.
So it's really funny that you know what that meant without me having to explain it to you.
Oh, yeah.
So for people that may be a little younger than you and I, MTV actually played music back in the 90s. 80s and 90s. And it wasn't until maybe like the early 2000s, mid-2000s, that it stopped basically playing music and it became like a reality TV show network. And most of the shows suck, by the way, in my opinion. But in the mid to late 90s, they really influenced a whole bunch of the horror movies specifically. I mean, they also kind of influenced the comedies, or I don't know what they call them, like the movies like Clueless, for example. And what's the other one? There was a couple other movies that came out in the mid to late 90s that were really influenced by the aesthetics of the MTV generation. But I think specifically the horror genre was really under that because it looked really dark and angsty and really, like you said, like maybe annoying kind of thing. I mean, even though I was a teenager in the 90s, I saw people around me acting the way the people in the movies did, if that makes sense. So it was a weird time to be to be a teenager or a kid or in the mid to late 90s. So yeah, that's what I meant by when I said the MTV aesthetic, because all the darkness and the weird,
Grunge.
yeah, there you go. It's really grungy but really like nu metal also at the same time. It's really weird. If you go back and watch nu metal videos or metal videos from that time period, they look really much like this movie, I think.
I think so because of the lipstick, the dark black jacket, the long one, it's everything. Grunge style back in the 90s.
Yeah, and a while back, a long time ago, back when Monica was still in the show, we did The Queen of the Damned, and that is an MTV movie for sure. Like, it was just super nu metal. And that movie, I think, is a better example of that aesthetic, but this one is kind of like in the beginning of that, like in the late 90s, early 2000s. It's one of the early examples of this thing, I think. But you mentioned, before I interrupted you, I'm sorry, by the way, that you had seen the one from the 50s. I've never seen it, so how is that one compared to this one, if you remember?
It's actually kind of similar.
Oh, really?
It's the storyline is a bit similar. So, watching this, I was very excited because I love the 50s version so much. And this one, I had very mixed feelings.
So you would say you're a bigger fan of the original?
Yes, absolutely. But the original doesn't have the beautiful brightness, bloody gore like this movie has. So that is probably the only thing that I am excited about this movie, about the 90s version.
Yeah, because the one in the 50s, it's black and white, right?
Yes, and later on, I think in when color came in, apparently they redid the entire movie. So you can actually find it on Prime today, and it's in color, and it's even digitalized in today's modern television movie version looking thing.
I believe the original was starred by legendary Vincent Price, who is one of the horror icons of the 20th century. I, oddly enough, haven't seen a lot of his movies though, but I do know that in this movie, the main character is named Price after him as a tribute of things of sorts, because Vincent Price passed away, I believe, in the early 90s. He was like already like in his 80s or 90s, I think. He was kind of up there in age already. And he actually, if you ever seen the movie Edward Scissorhands,
Yes.
he's the old man in the beginning.
Oh, is he? I didn't even realize that.
The guy that created Edward, quote unquote, that's Vincent Price, the actor. And I believe
Wow.
that may have been his last movie ever.
Oh, what an iconic movie as your last m movie to make. That's so sad.
And throughout his whole life, he made movies like that, really dark and gothic horror kind of thing. So that was kind of like his bread and butter. He made a lot of movies in the 50s and 60s and throughout his life. And yeah, the character of Price in this movie, in the 1999 version, is named Price because of him. They wanted to give him a tribute. Because I think the character in the original movie is not named Price, he's named something else. But, and speaking of characters, by the way, how do you feel about the characters individually? Do you have a favorite character in this movie?
I would probably say, I think it was probably Sarah is the only one that, It was, she did get me irritated a couple of times.
So explain why
So,
that was.
well, I think it was just her attitude in the movie, like coming in really hard, just that look on her face. And I don't know, it annoyed me a couple of times because she seemed very hard and then very caring and then very annoyed with everyone at the same time. So it was just a mix of emotions, and I was the only, she was the only one that I could stand. Everybody else and their individual characters were very hard to watch. With hers, I felt different feelings, so I was okay with her.
I
But yeah.
mean, she was the leading girl, quote unquote, so I think she's the one that you're supposed to like, kind of. But I didn't really like anybody in this movie.
That's so funny. Yeah, if I had to choose, it would have to be Sarah. But yes, I actually didn't really have any particular favorites or connections even with a lot of the characters. So.
Yeah, because the husband, for example, who's named Price, the amusement park owner, he's a weird character. I mean,
Yeah.
I think the actor did a good job with what he had, basically. I'm not criticizing his performance. I'm just, the character itself is just not very likable. I don't think you're supposed to like him, to be honest. So I guess he gets points for that, for making the character extra unlikable. And then the wife is also kind of a weird person.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, can you imagine being married to someone and hating them 24/7?
That would be my worst nightmare.
I mean, I've never been married. I've dated people that have made me not enjoy myself too much. But I've never
That's
hated.
just so
I
sad.
mean, yeah, it is sad, but I've never hated anybody, like, actively hated them.
That much.
But I mean, like anything else, you sometimes end up with someone that in the long run, you find out that you don't have a lot in common with, so it's kind of hard to keep that going. And in this movie, for example, yeah, these people hate each other. Both of them are really just at each other all the time. She admits to cheating on him with multiple people, and he knows about it, and he's like, oh, I just, whatever. And I mean, it's a weird marriage for sure. I like the actress, by the way. The wife, her name is Evelyn. I think she did
Yes.
okay, like as a character. But, and I like her. I mean, I think she's really a really attractive woman. But yeah, I don't think I would be able to be with someone like that. I just hated them 24/7. I mean, that relationship makes it really hard to like either of them, I think. And I think at some point she even admits that she's with him because of his money. That's the only reason why she married him. And then we have, of course, Sarah, who's the main girl, and she pretends to be somebody else, right? I think she pretends to be her former boss, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, by a different name. She came in with a different name.
So let's go over something really quickly because, I mean, well, there's a couple more characters here, but basically the story of the movie, Mariah, is that these people get invited to the house because they're connected to the people that worked there when it was a mental hospital. And yet, several of these people have no connection whatsoever to the people that work there. For example, the baseball player, whose name is Eddie, who also survives at the end, he's not connected to the family because he reveals in the very, very end that he's adopted.
Oh,
So he has no connection. The doctor has no connection because when they find out the employee log, whatever, nobody by that name is employed in that facility. But we find out that he's invited because he's the wife's lover. So
yeah.
yeah. And then Sarah ends up going because she either steals her boss's invitation or something like that. So she has no connection to this house whatsoever. And then the other girl, her name is I believe her name is Melissa. She is what I would describe as a very early influencer
Yes,
person.
absolutely agree with that.
So, what do you think of her walking around recording everything and trying to see if she finds creepy stuff to, I guess, make videos about? What do you think about that?
I think she definitely represents the early influencers. She has it down to the nail with her pretty hair, with her jewelry, just with her outfits too, the way she sways a bit, and her camcorder. And she's recording absolutely everything. But also, she's aiming for something that will blow people's minds, kind of like what we see today in viral videos. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of Randonautica, this part where her scene is, well, one scene of hers ends in, which is a bit of Randonautica to me for some weird reason. I saw that absolutely very similar.
I know what that is, but I've never done
I've done it and it's scary.
it. Isn't that the app that tells you to go somewhere and you find like creepy stuff in there?
Yes, you kind of think about something and then you think about it and then you have your phone open and the app open. And then apparently the app is supposed to focus on what you're thinking in your mind and then give you coordinates to go wherever you want it to go, wherever you said that you wanted to find, and you absolutely find it. So I had an experience with that. So that was creepy.
So, I've never tried it. I kind of want to at some point.
I was just saying, bring lots of good crystals or a rosary or something.
Protection.
It's really protection, yeah. It's really scary. So she has her camcorder throughout the entire film, I think, actually, right?
Yeah, up until the point that she dies, I think she. Oh, spoiler alert, by the way.
Yeah.
But up until the point that she dies, she's recording pretty much everything, yeah.
And she's just, I loved her style. Very influenced. It definitely reminded me a little bit of Clueless, the style version.
Yeah. Yeah, like a more grown-up, darker version of Clueless, I think.
Yeah.
No, but I agree with you. I mean, I do think that I can't remember back then. That wasn't really popular the way it is now, for example, as far as people wanting to go, quote unquote, go viral, because the internet was really slow still. YouTube wasn't around, by the way, in the year of 1999. So the only places you could post videos were probably blogs. And even then, it would have been super grainy and super slow. And I remember watching music videos back then on the internet, like in the 2001 and 2 era. And it was super slow, the sound was horrible, the image was disgusting. It was super grainy and pixelated.
I lived through this. It was horrible. The dial-up sound too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because I mean, but even when I was in school, for example, I was in high school back then, so I had a teacher back then that would let us hang out in his classroom during lunch. So I would go there during lunch and kind of watch music videos. And even though the school had a quote unquote fast connection because they had to kind of, it still was not very fast back then. So everything looked super grainy and stuff. So I imagine maybe she was more than likely trying to make a TV show more than a web page.
Yes, like the real world, which was pre-Kardashian era.
Oh yeah.
Back in the 90s, this was I think it was actually one of the first reality shows. So maybe that's probably what she was doing. In the early, well, I guess in the early days, that's what you would do is you would submit your films to movie product or I guess the productions of some sort
Like TV networks.
and try to get your content across and hopefully reach and hopefully blow their minds to wanna do stuff with you. So this is a very early example of that time. That was amazing to see the camcorder and everything. Just nostalgic.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, back then you had to get one of those things, and now you can just use your phone. Isn't it funny how that works?
Yeah. That is. And also, people would always say, don't be so close to the TV. And now that's all we have. It's a screen, always on a screen.
Your eyes are literally glued to a screen, like within inches of your face.
Yeah. How far we've come along in time.
Imagine what's gonna be like in 20 years from
Oh no. We're probably gonna be flying cars or something,
I
probably.
can't even imagine what it's gonna be like, to be honest, because when I was a kid in this time period in the late 90s, everything that we have now would have been considered science fiction, I think.
Whoa,
Yeah,
really?
I mean, we weren't. I mean, it's really hard
Wow.
for people who are of a certain age group. I mean, you're younger than I am, of course.
Yes, but we're both millennials. So I'm the last of the millennials.
Yeah, I'm like at the beginning of the millennial generation, and you're towards the end, I think.
Yeah.
And I just broke my back saying that. But it's really hard for a lot of people, especially your age or younger, Mariah, to imagine a world without the things we have right now. But we lived through it. And if me, my version of myself right now, 38-year-old Chewie, goes back in time and tells 15-year-old Chewie, "Hey Chewie, in 30 years, 20 years, you're gonna have this," I would have been like, "You're crazy, bro." Cell phones, I mean, cell phones were around back then, of course. But if you had told me that you're gonna be able to watch videos on your cell phone and record yourself and basically use it as a computer, I mean, I would have thought, I mean, that's a little bit too far-fetched back then, right? So
Yeah.
now, I mean, if let's say, for example, a 60-year-old version of Chewie comes in through a portal and tells me, "Hey Chewie, in the year 2050, you're gonna have this," and I would have, eh. "You're crazy."
Yeah, it does seem really realistic right now saying that. But then who knows in 20 years?
I mean, yeah, who knows? I mean, like, I can't
30.
even imagine what technology is going to be like, we're kind of a little bit off topic here, but not really.
Yeah, going really into
I mean, because technology does play a part in this movie.
Yes, big time.
In the sense that there's surveillance cameras, and the surveillance cameras get possessed by the spirits of the doctor or whatever. And speaking of the doctor, what do you think about the doctor? The evil doctor.
I'd say he's crazy. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I didn't really like him either. I didn't like anybody.
So we're talking about the doctor in the 1920s, not the doctor that is the lover of the wife.
Okay, yes. So, I thought he was very evil to where I think he was hurting a lot of his patients. And just, it was brutal that opening scene
Oh yeah.
with. What they did to him. I think it was actually him, right? That they
Yeah.
did that to. Yeah, it was so brutal. I was like, wow, this is awesome. I love watching this. But it was kind of nice because he was hurting those people. So it was kind of like a nice reward to watch
Yeah, like
the
payback type of thing.
gore. Yeah. And it was, I don't know. He seemed almost exactly a perfect example of what was said back in the day, back in asylums, back in the day, how the doctors used to treat their patients. And this is a probably very accurate example of how it was back then, trying to do new experiments and not even have FDA approved on a lot of things and stuff. So this was, well, and that's what this is, I believe, the film in the beginning where it's, I think it's supposed to be based in the early days or a lot earlier.
I agree with you. I mean, I have read and heard about
A lot of articles, at least.
how people were treated in these kinds of facilities back then. It wasn't the best place for them to be in, to be honest. But there have been reports of facilities like these in which people were basically sent by their families because they didn't want them, because they were embarrassed by them, because of their mental conditions. And another thing that they would do is if someone got tuberculosis, they would also send them to places like this, because back then tuberculosis was not curable. So, and it was highly contagious too. So if anybody got it in their family, people would just kind of send them to a hospital to die alone around these people that would mistreat them, because, I mean, it's horrible how some of these people were treated. I mean, they were not even given proper food and water. They were just sleeping on the floor. And I mean, depending on which articles you read, they go a lot into specifics and a lot into the details. And some of those stuff is really, really gruesome. But
yes,
it's reality. This stuff really happened back then, unfortunately. I'm not saying it's right. I mean, it's, of course it isn't, but it's sad how that was. And I think in this movie, you're absolutely right. I think they do kind of portray that part of it. People that are put in a sort of a mental hospital, and the medical staff is basically experimenting on them in horrible, horrible ways.
Which is so sad. It definitely also, it gave me a flashback of a horror show that I saw recently called Ratched. I think that's what it's called.
Oh, the one about the nurse.
Have you seen it? Yes.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it, yeah.
Netflix. Mm-hmm. It's, yes. So the doctor in that one is very similar, I would say, very evil mentality, exactly like this guy. And it's probably based around the same time, but from actual articles online and research and stuff, this was very real, I think, in my opinion, from everything that I've read and heard. And it's just so sad. And so it was kind of not super satisfying, but it was kind of cool to see them take their power back in this little short film that we get to see in the beginning of the film. So that was nice.
Yeah, the first scene is pretty brutal. Like you said, the patients escape and they basically murder all the staff. And they set the building on fire. And the doctor, in his last desperate evil deed, he actually locks everyone in, and only 5 people survived in the whole hospital, which are the people that the house invites, or the family members of those people are the ones that the house is supposed to invite. And speaking of the house, what do you think of the house? How does it look?
It's very interesting. It almost reminds me of Dexter's Laboratory. Why? Just in some parts. Like if Dexter had a laboratory house, this is possibly how it would look like. I don't know. That was the first impression I got from the house. It was so weird. I don't know.
I mean, because the house, or I mean, now it's a house, but somebody, the family of the weird guy with glasses that's always drinking. His family bought the mental hospital and they made it into a house. So would you ever want to live in a house that was a place where people died and were murdered and has a reputation for death?
I would say probably 70-30.
70 yes or 70 no?
70% yes and then 30% no. Probably because what if I get up in the middle of the night and get really scared and have a heart attack? So the other 70% is my horror love, which I would definitely love too.
I mean, the design of the house is again, very 90s, very MTV type of thing. If you think about movies from back then, for example, 13 Ghosts, it looks very much like this too. Really kind of like steampunk, mixing weird old technology with the 90s aesthetic. And the other one that I was thinking about, which other house? I think not so much The Haunting, the movie The Haunting, but in a way it kind of did also look kind of like this, because this looks like you said, like a mad scientist's laboratory basically. It's the vibes that I got from this house, because when you go in, it's got this huge main hall with the dining room and the bar and stuff like that. But then you keep going and you come across these tanks with people that are in there. Do you remember that?
I think so.
The glass tanks where people are, like, the remains of people are displayed.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, and then you keep going and you go into the basement and it's all this dark maze of weird rooms and the hospital stuff. And it's like, wow. I mean, I don't think I could live in a place like that, to be honest. I would visit it and maybe explore it, but I don't think I could live there, you know?
I definitely probably would because it's very curiosity, oddity. What is curiosities and oddities, or oddities and curiosity? Oddities and curiosities, I think. I said it backwards. But this is what that reminds me of. It's like a museum. I would love to display these because I actually have my own collection of very similar stuff we see in this movie. So that was kind of cool to see. But I would love it to be life size and stuff throughout my house. That would be so cool. I like how you're laughing, like you're scared.
I'm like, okay, well, if you ever buy a house like that, I would visit it, but I would leave as soon as I'm done what looking at all the rooms, by the way. just so you know, so we're clear on that. But I mean, yeah, the house itself is a big part of the movie, of course. And then at the end, what do you think of that whole weird spirit that starts killing them?
It was very 90s. I was expecting it to be a bit more iconic than the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and it wasn't. And of course, that was the technology they had at that time. Maybe, I think they could have done more, but when I was watching that scene where the spirit looks like it's attacking the, oh, what's his name again? I forgot his name.
The price?
The husband, Price, yes,
Yeah.
Price. So when the spirit's trying to attack him, I did put myself in his shoes and thought, oh no, ooh-goo-gooey, I would be so scared if that was me. This, and I actually saw this thing chasing me, I would be terrified. But from watching it as an audience, it didn't give me anything. I was not scared. I thought it's so cheesy. I thought Mighty Morphin's Power Rangers monsters were more iconic than this.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it's one of the best examples of CGI. It looks really weird and fake and everything. And I agree with you. I mean, yeah, if you come across something that looks like this, you'd probably be scared in real life. But as a movie watcher, you're like, eh. It looks a little funny. But the way they made that, and I talked about it in the other segment, but really quickly, they actually took video of naked women dancing, and then they use CGI to copy and paste it kind of all, like, all over itself, and that is why you're able to see what looks like arms and legs all over it, because it's just like a
Oh,
composite.
that's how they were able to capture that. Wow.
I think they just wanted an excuse to look at naked people dancing. Me personally.
Yeah. Like, this is work, honey.
Specifically, yeah, women. I mean, imagine, like, oh, this is one of the hardest days at work today is me recording 3 hours of naked women dancing. How am I gonna ever get through this day?
Very stressful.
Yeah, so but that's actually how they did it, according to the notes that I have here. Like, they recorded a whole bunch of people dance, or women specifically, dancing, and then they used the computer software to kind of just do a composite copy and paste CGI mixture of everything. So that's why it looks like there's a whole bunch of arms and legs everywhere. I think the ghost itself isn't really too scary, but I mean, it is what it is. And then, of course, at the end, we have the survivors, Eddie and Sarah, and they are stuck at the very top of the house. So, how do you think they got down, by the way?
I have no idea. I was thinking about that as soon as I was done watching it. I thought, when she asked, how are we gonna get down from here? And I thought the same thing too. So, hi. Like, do they can't call for help? I don't know.
No. I mean, I do think at some point they mentioned that someone's gonna come in and clean the house up, whatever, but that could take hours or days. I mean, I don't know. So it's kind of a weird, awkward place to find yourself in. So, all right, Mariah, do we have anything more to add before we go on to this course? All right, so we have our scores. I don't know of any units. Let me see. We're about the movie itself. How many naked women ghosts dancing? How many of those do we get the movie out of 10?
I want to get, I'm gonna give it a four.
A four? Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense to me. I'm gonna go with a five. Not too much higher than you, but I do feel like this movie isn't really, really good at all. I don't think it's terrible either. I mean, I think it's got some interesting moments as far as the scares and the plot twists. I mean, some of it's a little bit contrived, it's a little bit convoluted. But the story does have some interesting moments. The house itself looks kind of cool. It's just a base, it's a time capsule of the 90s. The late 90s, to be specific. So, if you're ever in the mood for reminiscing what it was like in the late 90s, or if you didn't live through that time period and you want to know what it was like, watch this movie. That's exactly what it is, just a time capsule of the late 90s. So, but yeah, I do feel like a lot of the characters were really unlikable. Actually, all of them were unlikable. There are some plot holes here and there that didn't really get resolved and doesn't really go anywhere, but yeah, I think a four out of five is a good enough a score for this movie. So, how about who's gonna be the villain in this? Is it gonna be the house? Is it gonna be the husband and the wife? Who do you think should be the villain for this?
I want to say the husband,
The husband?
I think so, in my opinion.
So, how many skulls do you give him? How evil does he?
A six.
A six?
I would say a six.
I mean, I do kind of want to agree with you that he is basically the main reason why they're here. I mean, it's the whole reason why they end up here, by the way, is that the wife sees the house in like this ghost adventures type of show, and she's like, "Oh my God, I gotta go party in the house for my birthday," and then she tells the husband, and he makes it happen. And throughout the whole movie, the one of the main plot points is that he's basically trying to kill her, and make it seem like somebody else did it and get away with it, basically. So he's not the nicest of people to know. But I do want to say that I think the house takes it for this one for me, in my opinion. Because of its history, because of everything that happened, because at the very end the ghosts of the house are the ones that try to kill everyone. But even then, I don't think it's very interesting. I mean, it could have been, but it wasn't. I think the execution was really poor. So I will give the house 5 skulls out of 10. If that makes sense.
I definitely think so.
All right, Mariah. So thank you very much for joining me for this conversation about the House on Haunted Hill 1999. It's always awesome talking to you about stuff like this.
Thank you. So much fun digging deep into the waters and just talking about cheesy 90s horror.
And of course, we don't know what's going on for next week, so
Yes, yeah. But I'm excited.
now we have actually a bad excuse though, because one, you've been busy with personal stuff, of course, and I got sick as a dog last week, so this episode had to be postponed for a whole week because I couldn't really talk. I had a really severe throat infection, so long story short, took about a week for me to recover. So that's why last week, if you're listening to this episode, there was no episode because of my sickness. So we're actually supposed to do a collaboration also, and I had to cancel that because of my my health status. But I am in the process of setting that in motion again, and that's probably gonna happen in a few weeks, hopefully, if things work out for all of our schedules. But as far as us, Mariah, For next week, I have no idea. So we'll, I guess, keep in touch and see what we can talk about for next week.
Yes, I'm so excited to consume another fun one.
Yeah, hopefully. So, well, that's gonna be it for this episode of Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. Once again, thanks to Mariah for joining me and her and giving us her very, very cool points of view and insights about this movie. And don't forget to check us out on social media. We are on linktree.com/mythsbehindLGDS. You can find our links to our Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, etc. And if you're listening to us on a service that allows you to score our podcast, by all means, give us the top score because why not? We are cool like that. So, in the meantime, stay away from weird, creepy houses where people died. Stay away from your significant other if they want to kill you. Like the husband and the wife in this movie, they hate each other. So, yeah. Anyways, yeah, stay away from people like that. And until we see you on the next one, have a good one.